everybody. Tracy Alcoholic.
Hey, Tracy.
If you want to introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Lisa. I'm an alcoholic.
I am kind of just going to jump right in first. I want to apologize for not being here last week. You can't hear me?
No.
Is that better?
No.
Okay. I want to apologize for not being here last week. I was on retreat, now I'm here. So, hey, what's up? So, how it works, chapter 5, page 58. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And for me, that sentence basically just means, you know, it was always told to me, if you want what we have, you got to do what we do. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. And for me, that was really tough. It was really tough for me to be rigorously honest with myself, let alone another human being, or any type of a higher power. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. So all of our experiences, strength, and hope. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked, we thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. And how many of us have tried the easier, softer way? Everybody's had their experience with that. I've got this under control. I'll just have this instead of that. I'll hang with these people instead of those. But it always ends up back in the same place. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. It's letting go of all of those ideas for me, and this is just for me. It was letting go of all of those ideas, all of those old friends, all of those old places, and all of those old things that I used to do. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful, and trying to change my life. You know, there was always something right here saying, but you can do it like this, or you can do it like that, or you can hang out with this one, you know, and that's my alcoholism talking to me. Without help, it's too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. And that's what this book is all about, finding a higher power, realizing that we cannot do this on our own. We need each other. And we need our higher power. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. And that's just about being honest with ourselves, right? You know, I take a sip of alcohol, my life becomes unmanageable, and I am powerless over how much I will drink or what I will do. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. So that is our own conception of God. When I was told that I didn't have to believe what you believed or what John believed or Jane believed or Sally believed, that what I believed was fine, even if it was the coffee can. You know, it didn't matter. As long as I believed that something in my life was working and had more power than I did. And that was the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for me in the beginning. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs, earnestly ready to have God remove all these defects of character, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings, made a list of all persons we had harmed, and became willing to make amends to them all. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And we will make mistakes. That's why it says when we are wrong. Because God knows I make mistakes all the time, and I have to atone for them. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And I underlined in all our affairs, and it reminds me of something I used to call the toothpick theory. So when I first came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was told, just do the next right thing. Just do the next right thing. And one day I was in my kitchen, and I was cleaning, and there was a toothpick on the floor. And I must have walked past it like 5 times and just left it there. And that voice inside my head, just do the next right thing, just do the next right thing. So I finally went over, I picked it up, and I did the next right thing. And I just tried to carry, do I do it perfectly? No. And that's okay. But I try to do that, you know, as perfectly as I can on a good day. So just doing the next right thing in all of my affairs. Many of us exclaimed, what an order, I can't go through with it. Don't be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. I don't know about anybody else in this room, but when I was first learning to grow in a spiritual manner, I wanted to do everything perfectly. I wanted to do the steps perfectly. I wanted to be the perfect sponsee. And, you know, all the sponsees I've had are like, but I want to make sure I do it right. But I want to make sure I do it right. And I always tell them, there is no right. This is just a journey, you know, and I'm just a guide. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapters to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas. That we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. Step 1. That probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. Also, step 1. That God could and would if he were sought. Step 2. All of these are physical, mental, and spiritual principles. Being convinced we were at step 3, which is that we decided to turn our will, i.e. our thinking, and our life, i.e. our actions, over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. I'm going to read that again. Any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. And that's whether you're sober or not. You know, when we, and I do it all the time, you know. I want something to come out my way. I am the director of my life. And I want it to come out my way. And I usually end up effing it up to, you know, a disaster. Or stepping on somebody else's toes in the process. When I follow God's will, or just try to step back and let go of control of the situation, it usually just happens organically and works out just fine. You know, might not be the way I like it, but it usually works out just fine. Now I'm going to start skipping around. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, forever trying to change the lights, the ballet, the scenery. And run it their own way. As I just said, I do this all the time, even with the smallest of things. You know, if I'm planning like a party for someone, I'm like, every single detail's got to be right. And then I get overwhelmed, and then I'm blaming everybody else for it because I want things perfectly done. And I have written here, if I don't arrange it or control the situation, I fail, which is an old idea or a behavior. And, you know, even at 12 years sober, I still struggle with that. Just letting go and letting God. Just letting things happen organically. So I'm going to skip down to what usually happens. Show doesn't come off very well, begins to think that life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself even more, and it becomes a snowball effect. On the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious as the case may be, the play does not suit him, admitting he may be somewhat at fault. He's sure that other people are more to blame, becoming angry, indignant, and self-pitying. Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things that he wants? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? For sure. You know, when we try to control... I'm sorry, this is going off. I'll try to turn it off. My apologies. There we go. Our actor is self-centered, egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays. And then they go on about the retired businessman who lolls in the Florida sunshine. But, you know, he goes on about the state of the size over the sins of the 20th century. Skipping down on page 62. Selfishness, self-centeredness. That, we think, is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows, and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. And that's when we are chiefly concerned with our own self. Our troubles are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. And God, I never wanted to say it, you know. I never wanted to see that I was the selfish one. I always made it look like I was doing something for you. Until I got called out on it. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must or it kills us, and God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Skipping down to the last paragraph, this is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God because it just doesn't work. Next, we decided that here and after in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He's the principal, and we are his agents. He is the father, we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. This was the foundation that was laid for me by my sponsor. And I found this just simple to understand. If I looked at it like God is the Father and I'm his child, I am a child of God. So what do I want to do to be in God's good graces? I want to be kind. I want to be generous to others. I want to be selfless. 3, we sincerely take a position. All sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer being all powerful. He provided us what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. So taking action, having being godlike qualities. And we do this by working the steps. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs, more and more interested in seeing what we can contribute to this life rather than what we could take out of it. And these are the third step promises. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, we discovered we could face life successfully as we become conscious of his presence. We begin to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter, and we are reborn. So less and less interested in myself, interested in seeing what I can contribute to life, enjoying peace of mind, facing life successfully, being conscious of a higher power, and losing my fear. Those all sound really cool to me. So, you know, what do I got to do to get that? The third step prayer, when the first time that I did it, I was sitting around a dining room table with my sponsor and a friend of hers. She was pretty old school, got sober in Jersey City. And back then when she got sober, they didn't have big book meetings. And so she had asked a friend to kind of join in with us. And they asked me to get on my knees, and I felt so weird doing that. And I'm like, are you serious? And they're like, yeah. And I thought they were playing with me at first. But they got down on their knees as well. And now before I did this, she had told me in the very, very beginning, she goes, this is what I want you to do every day. I want you to read the third and the seventh step prayer every day. And I did. Every morning, like clockwork, I read the third and the seventh step prayer with my cup of coffee. But that day when I got down on my knees, nothing happened, okay? I'm not going to say nothing changed, but nothing like changed like that. But I still didn't grasp the whole concept of it. I thought that something was supposed to happen. I later realized that I was just making a decision, you know? I wasn't like doing anything other than making a decision. We are now at step three. And many of us said to our Maker as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those that I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. And one of the exercises that I have my sponsees do is to write their own third step prayer and to utilize it. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready. Now, that first time, did I do that? No. I thought it was the right thing to do. And that's okay. You know, it was my first time. I knew that I wanted to be well. I knew that I think my motives were all in the right place, but I didn't really understand it. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we consider it and could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Found it very desirable to take this spiritual step with an understanding person, such as wife, best friend, spiritual advisor, sponsor, as it's better to meet God alone than with one who might misunderstand. The wording, of course, was quite optional so long as we expressed the idea, voicing it without reservation out loud. This was only a beginning, though if honestly and humbly made in effect, sometimes a very great one, was felt at once. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, which is steps 4 through 12. I'm not going to go through all the steps on the next pages. I'm going to leave that to Lisa to go through into action, but I'm just going to take a few more minutes and then I will turn it over to you. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless it was followed by a strenuous effort face-to-face to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Effort to face those things that had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom. So we had to get down to the causes and conditions, finding out what's broken in us. I needed to find out what was broken in me. Not maybe necessarily what was making me drink, because I was just an alcoholic, but what in me was causing me to behave in certain ways. Why did I feel worthless? Why did I not have any self-esteem? Why didn't I think I was worth saving? Why didn't I think there was any hope in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for me? So we're going out on a fact-finding basis. They go on to talk about how it's like taking an inventory, a commercial inventory of a business, the business of our lives. Finding out what's damaged, what's not usable goods, get rid of them promptly and without regret. And if we're to be successful, we can't fool ourselves about the values that we have. So we do the same thing with our lives, and we take an honest stock. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations, the appearances, the demonstrations of it. And resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else, and from it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we have not only been mentally, physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. And when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And most resentments have fear attached. I know for me that was true. One of the hardest things I did when taking an inventory, probably like my third or fourth inventory, which was the hardest one I had ever done. My mother had just been diagnosed with breast cancer at 80 years old. She was not going to have any treatment. And my mother was an alcoholic for years. And I had a huge resentment against her. And I'm in the middle of writing my resentment inventory, mostly about her. And I find out she's dying. And I talk to my sponsor, and I'm like, I'm going to stop. You know, I need to take a break. And she's like, you need to keep going. You need to keep going. And I thought, you witch. You know, how horrible is that? And I did keep going. And I am so glad that I did. Because before my mom passed, I was able to see her. Like I hadn't seen her before. Just for her. Who she was. And accept her where she was at. And I don't think that I would have been able to do that had I not kept going. She may have passed, and I still would have had that resentment and not been able to accept her for who she was and where she was at. I conduct my life based on my beliefs. Therefore, I must have new beliefs to begin my life anew. Something that I wrote in here that I thought I'd share with you. So they give you an outline here of how to list out your resentments, who you are resentful at, what the cause is, what's making you angry about it, and what it affects. Your sex relations, self-esteem, security, your pocketbook, your personal relationships, your pride. You know, and almost always mine are attached to some sort of fear. Okay, I'm going to skip over to page 67, the bottom. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It is evil and corroding. It is an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? So a lot of times when we do our fourth step, we see that we did set the ball rolling. Almost always. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. For now, we're on a different basis. The basis of trusting and relying upon God. I'm in the middle of page 68. We're now going to humbly rely on him so he can enable us to match calamity with serenity. And that's a fourth step promise. And that's the absence of our self-will. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think the way of spirituality is weakness, but paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage, and all men of faith have courage. But you cannot have courage without some faith, how does that go? You cannot have faith without courage, and you cannot have courage without faith. Anyway, so we are looking to commence to outgrow fear. It doesn't always go away, and it doesn't go away forever. But in order to do that, we have to take some action. and with that, I will give you Lisa with Into Action.
Hi, everyone. Lisa Alcoholic.
Hi, Lisa.
Thank you, Tracy. Chapter 6, Into Action. So just going back to what Tracy was reading about and going through our resentments, step 4, I remember going into that, like, you know, when I came in here, everyone was, I judged everyone, I judged everything, it was always somebody else's fault. It was never my fault. And then when I went through step 4 with my sponsor, I started realizing my part in a lot of the things that I was resentful at. And I saw a pattern. And with that pattern, I learned a lot about myself. I learned that that I was selfish, that I didn't have boundaries. I learned that I had a lot of issues with self-worth. And these were things that I really needed to change in my life. And in order to do that, I had to take the steps necessary. I had to get honest. I had to start being real, not only with my sponsor, but with myself. And what we need to do is take action. We can't just sit here and expect, I can't just sit here and expect it to happen. You know, I have to do something. I have to do the footwork. I have to get my butt up off the couch, which I didn't want to do tonight, and sit here and speak to you guys. You know, I have to do this, or I become very sick. And it's a slow going process, but I can feel it. Like, if I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do, if I'm not getting up in the morning and saying my prayers, if I'm not doing my meditations, if I'm not reaching out and I start to go into my little isolation mode, I like it there. That's comfortable, you know, and I stay there, and that's where trouble starts, because that's the kind of drinker I was. I was an isolator, and it was easy for me because I lived alone, so it was just comfort. So when people are like, oh yeah, you know, we're not going to go out tonight, you know, they cancel plans, I'm like, yes. Yes, I love it. I love to just stay home and do nothing. It's just my thing, my jam. Okay, sorry about that. I went on a little tangent. Page 72. The best reason for going into action is if we skip this vital step. Now, they're starting to tell you the consequences. Like, if you don't do what we're telling you to do, this is what's going to happen. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. And that vital step is the step where we tell another alcoholic what it is that our resentments are. You know, you sit down with your sponsor, you could sit down with a friend, you can sit down, it doesn't necessarily have to be your sponsor, but I would, you know, reading through this, I was more comfortable speaking to my sponsor because she understood. She understood my ism. She understood where I was coming from. And when I opened up to her, it was just such a relief and a release. And I was able to, I felt like I was able to breathe. It didn't feel good. I can tell you that. It didn't feel good to share a lot of the things that I was so humiliated over and so shameful and embarrassed. But when I'm telling her these things and she's nodding her head like, yeah, I get it, me too, and it just, it makes you feel so much better. It gives you that sense of comfort. Time and after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives. Trying to avoid this humbling experience, they have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. That's because they're doing their own self-will. They want to do it their way. We want to do it our way. I mean, that's what we're used to. Changing our way of thinking and moving into a different process of a different way of life is basically how I started to change. You know, realizing my way isn't working anymore. Having persevered with the rest of this program, and they wondered why they fell. And a lot of us that, you know people who have relapsed, you know, this can try that. And you know, thank God I have not had that experience. So I don't know what relapse is, and I hope I never, ever find out. But I do have a lot of friends in this program that have, and it helps me to understand, you know, and it helps me to understand my sponsees if, God forbid, any of them would go out. We think the reason is that they've never completed their house cleaning. So right there, it's telling us, well, you know what? You need to really, like, don't hold back. If you feel you can't tell your person, your sponsor, everything that's, like, weighing you down, maybe you need another sponsor. And that's what somebody had said to me. You know, if you're worried so much about what somebody else thinks, like this sponsor that you have, it could be that you just can't open up to this person. You're not ready. They took inventory, all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves, but they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty. In the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all of their life story. And, you know, when I am doing step five with my sponsees, you know, is that everything, guys? Is that everything? Is there anything else you need to get off your chest? You know, go home, sit with your God, and talk to God, and go over everything, and go through your work. And if you feel you've done it all, then we'll move forward. But we have to get honest with ourselves. And it wasn't easy for me to do, because, you know, in my alcoholism, I blocked out a lot. I blocked out a lot of my darkness because, you know, I didn't want to face it. I didn't want to face the tribulations of my past and my childhood that brought a lot of pain and a lot of, you know, a lot of chaos and just discomfort. And then, but you guys tell me, pain equals growth, right? Mm. So I always hear that pain equals growth. So, and it's so true, because how do we learn? We learn through our pain. And when we're putting it on paper, like, I know one of my sponsees doesn't like to write, and it's, but I didn't in the beginning either, but it's something to be said when you're putting pen to paper and you're starting to write down all of these, you know, all of these things that have happened to you in the past, and then you go back to them, or you're writing down your feelings at the moment and you go back to them later on and you're like, wow, I was really sick. I can't believe how sick I was, you know, like just the way I would think. My way of thinking is so different, and it changes all the time. And that's the beauty of growth. You know, it's not always comfortable, but it's necessary. Let's see, on page 73, they mention about psychologists, and they mention about, it says, psychologists are inclined to agree with us. We have spent thousands of dollars for examinations. And I remember going to my therapist, and I was going to her, and I'm like, oh, my life is just terrible. I have such bad luck. I'm just so unhappy and so depressed. But I didn't tell her I was drinking. I would go there, like, half-crocked out of my head with my little sippy cup to my therapist and telling her I'm just so sad and miserable, hate my life. And she was just sitting there waiting for me because she was a recovering alcoholic. And she, when I finally opened up and told her, she goes, I knew you were drinking the whole time. I was waiting for you to tell me. You know, but I was going to everybody else for answers. You know, I didn't want to believe that I had a problem with alcohol. I just wanted to be fixed. I wanted to continue drinking, but I wanted someone else to fix me. If I could have taken a pill to just, you know, continue drinking and everything would be fine, I probably would have done it. But that can't happen, right? We must entirely be honest with somebody if we expect to live long or happy in this world. I'm one of those people pleasers. I want everybody to think I'm happy, and you know, I walk around with this big smile on my face all the time, because I don't want to let you in, and that's like kind of like my mask sometimes, you know. And I have to sometimes I have to let you know what's going on with me. You know, I need to be honest with you. I need to tell you, no, I'm not doing so good today. You know, and how would you know if I'm just walking around like this all the time, like smiling, right? But those that are close to me, you know, it's hard for me to let people in because I have an issue with trust. It's that fear of getting hurt. It's that fear of being vulnerable. And that's how I grow, when I'm vulnerable and I'm honest. It goes on page 75. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. And that can only happen when we truly surrender and we truly give everything to God, to our God, or to our higher power, or to like whatever you believe in. I know for me it didn't come right away, and I still struggle with it sometimes. I always want to take my will back, but I do know now through being in the program for a little while, not very long, but a little while, and going through the steps, I can see when things aren't feeling so good, when I start to get squirrely, you know. I can feel when I'm on the beam, you know, and if I feel like things are going good. And it's always because I am doing what I'm supposed to do. But it's so funny because I said to myself, why can't it always be like that every single day? Just wake up and do what you're supposed to do, you know. But we're human, and that doesn't always happen. Things happen. Life happens. Page 76. We look at step 6. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every single one? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. So I remember going through step 4, you know, 4 and 5 with my sponsor. She was able to help me dissect a lot of my character defects. And, you know, because she told me I had to go home and I had to write them down. And when I tell you, I filled up 2 pages of character defects. And she's like, okay, we're going to narrow this down a little bit. Because, you know, a lot of them all, pretty much, most of them were, but like you said, fear-based. Mm-hmm. I was afraid of everything. Like, it's crazy how I even would go to work or how I would, like, drive a car. Fear just consumed me. Fear if you liked me or not. Fear if I was, you know, a good enough person, a good enough parent. And I didn't realize just how, you know, I don't like to say broken, how broken I was. But let's face it, I was broken. And I needed someone to love me so I could love myself. Love me enough to love myself. So all my girls that, you know, I love so dearly, they love me unconditionally. And that's what I needed. I needed somebody to take me by the hand and say, it's okay. It's okay. We got this, you know. And that helped me get through my character, get through this portion of 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. You know, those are the action steps where we really have to dig deep, and we really have to, you know, it's not a good feeling to say, okay, I'm selfish, I'm this, I'm that. Like, who does that? Normal people really don't work on themselves like that. You know, we're blessed to have this program. We're blessed, I'm blessed to be able to sit there and work on myself and give myself an opportunity to have a better life. Like, I wish sometimes everybody would have a program, because maybe this world would be a better place. It's harder to go to an enemy than to a friend. Oh, yeah. So when you're going to, like, when you're starting out going to, you know, your to make your amends, and you get through your character. Well, first of all, let me go back up a little bit. I skipped over character defects. When I went home to pray on my character defects and to say, you know, like, what do I want God to take from me? Like, it was, let's face it, I was like, okay, God, please take that away. I didn't feel anything, you know. I wanted to. I wanted to feel like this lift and this release, but that didn't happen. But I started to take notice in my character defects as time went on. Like, if I, you know, I had a really big problem with lying. I was the biggest liar. I lied about everything, even when I didn't have to lie. And when I started to do that, it was like in the program with, when now I have God in my life, I would feel that feeling inside of the pit of my stomach, like, oh man, that doesn't feel good. I guess I got to tell them the truth. And even though it made me feel this big, it helped me so much, and it lifted that feeling of like, oh my God, why did I do that? Why did I say that? You know, as we go on down at the bottom of 77, when we start to do our amends and we start to list the people who we feel have wronged us, they're kind of mentioning how it's so much harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial. And I noticed that in my amends, I had a dealing with that. You know, the person that I thought that I hurt the most, when I went to tell them what I did and how I felt, and I'm sorry. You know, I didn't even say I'm sorry because I didn't want to use that word, because sorry is such an easy word to use. I wanted to let them know what I did wrong in our relationship, and the person just was like, yeah, it's cool, don't worry about it. And I'm like, really? That's it? You know? And they're like, no, you know, I know, like, you're good, you're good. That person wasn't even listening to me, but I did my part. I showed up, I cleaned my side of the street, and we move on. But I noticed that my family, they love me no matter what. You know, they love me unconditionally. So I sat with them and went, especially my son, who is the love of my life. And, you know, when I sat with him and we went over things and I said, is there anything you want to say? Is there anything I left out? And he was like, no. And he's one of those kids that just kept it in because he didn't want to hurt his mom. But he finally opened up and said, I just think you were really selfish, Ma. You were a really selfish person. And, oh, my God, that killed me. You know, to hear those words from your kid. And I always thought I was the least selfish person, especially with my kid, you know. I was like, oh, the things I've done for you. All my sacrifices. But yeah, he, when he said that, he was like, you just always put yourself first, and my happiness came on the back end. And man, that was a big piece of humble pie, that's for sure. And but I needed to hear that. I needed to hear how I hurt my child, how I hurt my son, and how my drinking affected his life. Going through page 78 and 79, they're speaking of, you know, how we make amends if we owe money. And if we actually hurt someone, like I had an affair when I was drinking, and the man I had an affair with, he was also married. We were both married, and we both left our spouses to be together. We hurt so many people, and you know, I realized, you know, going through my work, like I wanted so badly to fix everything. And there's just certain things that I can't fix. You know, I reached out to his wife, to his ex-wife, to make an amends to her. And it was so, oh my God, it was so hard to do. And she wants no part of me. So I have to accept that. I have to, you know, say, okay, you know, if you're ever ready, please give me a call, because I would really like to talk to you about what I did. And man, when she said no, like, I have nothing to say to you, effing, you know, whatever. Like, she didn't have nice words to say. It hurt, but I hurt her. I hurt her. And, you know, that was in the height of my drinking. That's when drinking was really bad. But I can't take it back, you know, and I just have to move forward. Let's see. Page 80. Before taking drastic action, which might implicate other people, we secure their consent. If we have obtained permission, have consulted with others, ask God to help, and the drastic step is indicated, we must not shrink. I know that I have to go to my sponsor before I make a big move like that, because I need guidance, because sometimes I just don't say the right thing. You know, I want to get it all out there, but what I say might hurt that other person. And that's not why we're doing this. We're going to them and we're making amends to clear our side of the street, but to kind of give them peace as well. You know, granted, it gives us peace, but we're not there to hurt anybody else. We're not there to make anybody else feel bad. You know, I did speak to my parent. Like, I was really hoping that my dad would do an amends with me, because I went to him and I did my amends, and he's in the program, but he's never done an amends with me. So I was hoping that that would like stir something up and I would get one from him, but it didn't happen. And that's because his experience with the program didn't involve the steps. He did not work the steps. He didn't do anything like that. He had old programs, so he was all about meetings, 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 meetings. I mean, he believed in the big book, but he didn't do the steps, so of course he didn't make amends, you know, because he was like, ah, I don't believe in that stuff. You know, I'm sorry. No, Dad, I don't. Page 83. I'm trying to skip around because we don't have a lot of time. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindness, and love. Spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. And I can sit here and preach and do all that other good stuff, but my sobriety is in my actions. You know, love and tolerance, patience, forgiveness, you know, trying not to entertain gossip, which is really hard, you know, especially being in my profession. I was with two women that I work with, and that's all they did today was, and I'm literally drained from it, because I just sat there and I'm playing with her baby, and you know, they're gossiping and gossiping and gossiping, and I just wanted to remove myself, but I drove the girl, So I couldn't leave, but I'm exhausted. It's like an emotional hangover because I don't want to live like that anymore. You know, it doesn't do anything for me. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. And that is something that I constantly have to look at because I am not a punching bag. I am not a doormat. Just because I am a sober woman and I'm living an honest life and I clean my side of the street doesn't mean you can step over my boundaries. You know, I still have to maintain that. You know, you're not allowed to come in and disrupt my peace that I've worked so hard for. So if anything disrupts my peace, I try my best to eliminate that and to move forward and say, okay, this isn't suiting me. I have to, you know, look at this from a different light and go to my God and say, okay, what do I do here? And that's like, you know, ending a relationship with a sponsee. That is one of the hardest things to do. And, but if it's disrupting my peace, I have to do it. I have to. Because this is my program as well. Page 84, it's not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When those crop up, we ask God to at once remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately, make amends quickly. If we have harmed anyone, then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. And that's what it's about, love and tolerance. You know, even when I really don't want to be, you know, tolerant of others and forgiving, you know, sometimes it's not so easy. But that is our code, and that's why we're here. We're here to help others. And I know I always feel 100% better when I help other people and help another alcoholic. So I'm going to stop at that because then next week we'll talk about working with others. So I hope we brought you a good message tonight. Thank you.